This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to episode 209 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. Folks, we don't know how this episode's going to end, you know what I mean? My name is Wayne.
It's true. I was going to make someone crack like that too. Uh-huh. My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast. We count down movies, sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. And as Wayne has alluded, as he often does, today's topic is the top 10 ambiguous film endings.
Yeah.
With thanks to top-level patron Sally Vaughan.
What's up, Sally?
This suggestion, which was around sort of, was it a dream films? Well, we've slightly tweaked it to be ambiguous endings.
Ambiguous endings.
So whether it ended in a good or a bad way, or a heartwarming or a tragic way, you don't know for sure. The filmmaker has been brave enough to let you, the audience, choose how it ends. And so we'll get into our favorite versions of those today.
I got an approach on this one, man.
Save it for the actual countdown.
I shall.
Won't be too far away because we haven't got too much to get through today. But one thing that we do need to acknowledge first off and foremost is, of course, our plug.
For the Podcast Republic app.
A robust
and good ass
app for your Android device.
Right.
And one of our listeners, Mike Margosian,
The
Facebook listener community, link is in the show notes. He decided to make the switch this week and reported back to the group saying it actually is good.
It is in fact good ass and robust.
Not that we're shocked by that, just the fact that one of our listeners listened to what we had to say.
No, it's an actual live testimonial. Yes. That is the best marketing tool in your arsenal.
Yeah, so trust me. It works much better than whatever the app it was using before. So thanks for that, Mike, for letting us know, and check it out if you are yet to do so.
Word.
Results then from last week, Wayne, the top 10 British films.
Oh, yeah.
As it were. I'm leading 4-3 on the year thus far.
Mm-hmm.
It was another well-voted week. 55 votes this week.
Yeah.
22 of them to you, 33 to me.
Ooh, sound pasting.
It was a solid victory, but a lot of this was achieved, again, with thanks to Mike Margosian, because he decided to put the voting to a stringent kind of
Google Sheets test. There's actual methodology and calculations and fucking villagers, all kinds of shit.
When we first announced it, I was a bit like, I was just amazed that someone would go to all that effort. And thank you, Soundboy, for joining us today.
I'm very impressed. And also, good God, you people are analytical minds. Yeah. I don't roll like that, as you know. So
if you want to help to sort of decide who should win each week, and you're not, well, you have to be in the Facebook listener community because that's the only place we allow the vote to happen. Head on over there, get involved with Mike's list, and thank you so much for that, Mike. A bunch of people did, and most of them came out my way.
Yeah, the fact that Paul is promoting this makes me think there's some algorithm in there that's actually in his favor.
Logic is in my favor.
No, it's not an algorithm. I stand resolute, motherfucker.
Some of the responses then from the group. So Matt Rochelle had, close as usual, Paul gets my vote for Monty Python. Very good and very British.
Sure.
Glenn Sutherland said, Wayne, for thinking outside the box.
Word.
Blake Jarvis also said Wayne. Paul had the more authentic list, but personally, I enjoy Wayne's choices better.
People do enjoy me more.
Steve Szetzi, I think I've said that wrong, Steve. I really, really do apologize. As a Turkmenistani who likes Sting, I'm not sure if either deserve my vote. Bit of a play on what happened last week there.
I really want him to be a Turkmenistani.
And Mel Walker said she voted for Paul because his top three were my top three.
There you go.
Thank you for that.
Can't go any other way.
And a bunch of other people, obviously, had votes either way. But I want to finish up with Nick from our Epic Film Guys, our good friend. Said, Wayne, we've talked about this. Now I have to vote for Paul. Do you see what you've done? Now I need a shower. I feel unclean.
Understandable. A lot of people feel that way about me too.
Things actually for voting for me, they feel that way.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, nonetheless. And lastly then, before we move into the countdown proper, I want to give a big shout out to David Powell, who is fast becoming, our resident expert on all things we know nothing about.
Whoa, that's a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And this week he wanted to clarify what Triple Frontier was. If you go back to last week's main review,
I made up some bullshit, yeah.
Wayne did a very good job of trying to explain to me what Triple Frontier was. Here is the actual explanation from David Powell. Triple Frontier is a tri-border area along the junction of Paraguay, Argentina, and Brazil, where the Iguazu and Paraná rivers converge.
I see. So it's an actual geographical thing. I see. Very cool.
Which we did not know and could have done our research on, but thank you, David.
Nice one. Thanks, man.
That's it for the preamble to the show, except for one other thing. What? One last thing. This week, episode 209. Next week, episode 210. Mm. Last episode, I'll be drinking on for a while.
Oh, Paul's going sober.
I'm going sober for 6 weeks.
You better be funny still, motherfucker.
I think I'm right.
We'll see. Okay. Not a good sign. bitch, please.
Effectively, I am training for a half marathon, and as long as my knee, which seems to be a bit proppy at the moment,
look
holds
at this
up,
Iron Man motherfucker right here.
Running that May 19th. So for the 6 weeks following, maybe even 7 weeks, we'll probably have to record that week early. Next seven episodes, I will not have one drop of alcohol in me.
Yeah, I'm worried. I'm worried, but we'll just see how it goes. Maybe I'll, you know.
You're worried for the quality of the show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Who knows how it's going to go if you care.
All right. All right. I guess we shall.
So, all right.
So there's a notification for all you good listeners. All right. Without any further ado, then, on the other side of this music cue, let's do it. The top 10 most ambiguous, sorry, best ambiguous endings. Top 10 ambiguous endings in film history is today's topic. And Wayne, you said you're coming at this a certain way.
Yeah, first of all, it's not the best that I put. It's just my favorite. So I guess I think it's the best for me. But
well, of course. It's always that
it's
way,
always
right?
It's always that way, right? Yeah, okay.
It's hard to objectively say these. Although with the last episode of the show will be the top 10 films of all time, whenever that does come around.
We're never doing that fucking
and the
show.
Second last episode will be our favorite 10 films of all time. Yeah.
Okay, okay,
yeah,
well.
In those two episodes, we will be perfectly encapsulating the difference between the best and trying to defend.
We're not actually planning on this episode anytime soon, guys. Just so you know.
It's eventually.
Yes, exactly.
Whenever that eventually does come to pass. But today is our top 10 ambiguous endings.
Okay, well, my little way that I went about this is that I'll tell you the movie, and if it's not in as non-spoilery as way as possible, I'll tell you about the ending, and then I'll say to you which way I think it went.
Okay,
it's an ambiguous
sure.
ending.
Sure.
It could go this way or that way, but I think it went this way. Boom.
Some of mine I would feel comfortable commenting on, others not so
yeah,
much.
It's purely just me being arrogant and saying, it's this! So
it is definitely this.
Exactly.
Flop.
That's right. Good thumb.
All right, do you want me to start?
Yeah, you start, man.
All right, I'm going to kick off then with a filmmaker that I don't often mention on this show, except when we're talking about pretension. It's Darren Aronofsky, The Wrestler.
Ah!
Yeah.
Yes,
have you seen
good.
This one?
You know what? I did... I didn't see it, but I know exactly what happens in it.
Wayne's watched a lot of endings. Some of them happy, some of them not so much.
Yeah, and I saw the ending of this
and
one.
And he's also watched films. Not just porn.
Exactly. There's a happy ending. There.
Yes. This one is a film. So Mickey Rourke plays the titular wrestler. He's trying to make a comeback. His life's on the skids. And Aronofsky has him basically develop a heart problem.
Mm-hmm.
And he's told, don't wrestle again. If you wrestle again, there's a good chance you will die in the ring.
Right.
And so he nonetheless goes to make his triumphant return into the ring, have his fight, and the very end of the film is him on the top rope about to do his signature move.
Yep.
Even though he's been feeling pain in his heart, and he leaps over the camera, end film.
And he leaps out of frame in slow-mo.
Yep.
You don't know what happened to his ass.
Did he live? Did he die? I mean, Aronofsky's not really known for his best happy, upbeat ending, so
no,
you can probably conclude what was going to happen.
You know, I do,
but it's left to your device.
I do like that. I typically don't enjoy ambiguous endings because you're you guys.
I think
need
the right ones are phenomenal.
Yeah, if it's performed well, it is better because of it. Mm. But if it's not, it's Back to the Future 2. So
that's not ambiguous. That's a cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger. We give you the shits, man. I fucking walked out of there pissed when I was a kid. Hoi. Anyway,
you and my daughter share something in common then, because we watched the first Back to the Future. We got the second Back to the Future, and at the end, she goes, "What was that?"
Imagine if you took a bus to the fucking cinema and then sat through the motherfucker and then paid for it and then didn't get satisfied.
Yeah, and she so far we've never watched Back to the Future 3. She's not interested.
Oh, it didn't sound me. I still wanted the third. Oh, shit.
So
okay.
She's cut off that series for sure. So, yeah, that's my 10. And like I said, not a huge Aronofsky fan, but
you're not.
This is his best film for me.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe we should watch it for real one day. Anyway. Okay, my number 10 is a movie that I adore. It's called The Life of Pi.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah.
Okay,
I thought this would be higher, so I am surprised.
Yeah, this is a funny list, man, because it's hard to go which is better or worse or whatever, but I love this movie, and I guess I love the ending, although that's less a feature than how much I love the movie. See, it's about this Indian fellow, kid, and he's recounting when he was a kid, and his dad is a zoo owner. They took his mom and all of the family, all of the zoo animals on this boat. The boat gets shipwrecked. And basically, Pi survives in a lifeboat with a zebra, orangutan, a hyena, a male Bengal tiger named Richard Parker, and then they're adrift in the ocean and all kinds of nasty shit happens. At the end, you're sort of left wondering whether the animal stuff actually happened, and there's strong evidence to suggest it did not, or if that's a sanitized version of the real atrocity being that his parents were killed by Gerard Depardieu. Now, he says in this movie that, you know, look, in both versions of the story, his parents are killed, so which version of the story do
would we prefer? He's talking to Rafe's balls.
Exactly, yeah. And I actually am on board with that kind of thinking. I think fooling your brain is an important life skill you might need to get through your life in the right way. And so, but this is just a, I love the movie. And again, this is one of the endings where, because it was, you know, if it wasn't an ambiguous ending, it wouldn't really be that good a movie.
Well, to suggest this absolutely is 100% truth would have changed the tone of the film.
Completely, and that's why I made it better. So obviously my position is, yes, all the bad shit really happened, but I'm happy for you to tell this fucking tiger story.
Fantasy version of it.
Exactly. Yep. So I'm down with that. So yeah, that's
I would agree. I think the film heavily implies it was all a fable.
Yeah, like the bananas are floating on the water, which doesn't happen. Yeah. And yeah, you know, all that sort of shit. So yeah, but I love the movie.
Very nice. Okay. My number nine is a film which I don't even know if you've seen, but it does contain a very, very important element of this show. It's this soundboard entry.
You're a cunt.
Oh, God.
You're a cunt now. You've always been a cunt.
Any excuse to play the whole overlong sound. The only thing that's
going to change is you're going to become an even bigger cunt.
Look at that.
Yeah. So I'm talking about In Bruges.
Oh!
Yeah. Martin McDonagh.
Yes.
McDonagh, if I can even say his name correctly. Film about with Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson playing these two hitmen who are sent off to or having a bit of a break in Bruges. Things go wrong. Rafe Fiennes is their boss. Now, it ends, again, I probably should have said this, pretty obvious, spoilers for this episode.
Yeah.
If we mention a film, it's going to be spoiled. So if you want to watch it, skip forward.
I reckon most of mine are pretty old movies, so at least it's mitigating that potential risk for you, listeners. So yeah, but yeah, go ahead and skip it if it's...
Yeah, I don't think there's much new on my list either. The newest film on my list is from start of last year.
I think it'll be fine.
Other than that, everything is at least 5 years old.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
All right, so In Bruges, in the film, effectively, it's one of these ones where did he die, did he live, did he not? So,
did you like this movie?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's a good example of when expectations completely fuck you in the ass. I saw In Bruges hoping for a gangster movie. And
it's black comedy.
It's anything but. It's basically from a play, which means it's like a couple locations tops. And it is really, really good, but I was like, ah, shit, I was looking for something else. Having said that, yes, I wondered whether he survives. And it's pretty good the way it comes about, too.
Yeah, well, Ray gets shot like multiple times by Harry, and then one of the bullets catches this... I think it's a dwarf.
A little person.
What the, is that the technical term?
Is that what it's called? Yeah, I don't know.
These days, yeah. A small person and kills him. And Harry has repeatedly said if he ever killed a kid, he would just kill himself. Right. He turns around and kills himself.
Go stand by your fucking morals. Boom,
yep, bam, kills himself. And Ray is left there sort of bleeding out. The ambulance arrives. And at the end of it, he declares in voiceover narration.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Basically, he says, look, I really hope I don't die.
Yeah.
And then it's just that he's loaded onto the ambulance and that's what we're left with. Did he? Didn't he? It's up to you to decide.
And because he was the guy who accidentally killed a kid in the beginning,
yes.
Does he want to live? He does in the end.
Well, he does in the end. He realizes because he's quite depressed through the whole film and he's contemplating. Yeah.
Actually, that's why it was a bit of a tough watch from that. Yeah. So, fair enough. Okay, good one.
Very,
good
very black, very dark comedy.
Now, from something slightly, well, pretty dark to quite a bit lighter, my number nine is the movie Lost in Translation.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So this is where Bill Murray is like some kind of aging, kind of like a famous guy. He goes to Japan, meet ScarJo. They turn out to have this wonderful friendship. I've talked about this slightly on the show before, but basically the reason this movie is awesome is because their friendship is just beautiful and it's genuinely love, even though it's friendship. I have loved women like this before, I believe, where it's just you're very concerned about her and it's very pure. Now, at the end of the movie, he has to leave Japan. She has to leave Japan. So he says his goodbyes, but at the end, he stops his cab. He sees her in the crowd. He runs up to her. They embrace and he says something to her. And you can hear the, and she goes, okay, and that's it. And then he does kiss her, but it's not quite a sexual kiss. It's a goodbye kiss, I love you kiss. And then they leave. You don't know whether they get together, what he said, what's going on. Well, listeners, here's an exclusive. I know what he said.
What?
I do.
No.
I went online and I started searching for it. Some dude has like digitally fucking enhanced the that Bill Murray says, slows it down, processes it, and tells you. And you can actually hear what he says. And the thing that he says to her, what causes the ambiguity is, do they get together, do they don't, is, I have to be leaving, but I won't let it come between us. Okay? And she says, okay.
Bullshit.
No, it's really what happens. Go ahead and look it up, people.
Bullshit.
Fuck you. Look, I love this fucking movie, and I do adore this ending. And I don't know. I just love, this is, again, it's my favorite. My ninth favorite. So And it's not a, you know, it was like
on a lot of listener feedback.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. People totally.
Oh, because it's not a baffler or anything. It's just it's just that.
Well, yeah, it's going to end however it's going to end. But yeah, everyone apparently that was ad libbed.
Yes, and that's why no one knows the line because he just did it. And it's
I would assume Scarlett Johansson would know the line.
Sorry, ScarJo does, and I guess the sound editor would have decided, like, or the director said, just make that completely not audible, and then it was cool.
So say it again. What did he say?
He's in her ear. He says, "I have to be leaving, but I won't let that come between us." Okay. And then she says, okay.
As in promising that there's a future between
them. Yes, he says, I'm going to come back and see. I'm going to somehow be with you after this.
In a creepy way?
No.
Because that was the power of the film that it never went that road.
Yes, it doesn't go creepy because here's what it is. When she spies him and he runs up to her and they embrace, she definitely wants him. Like, she's burying her head in his shoulder. So he was obviously comfortable saying that. So I like that. I like that.
Okay. All right. Well, you're number nine. Sure. It's definitely an ambiguous ending. So is mine, and you're going to hate it.
Oh, what?
My number eight is from Nicholas Winding Refn's Drive.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Look. Yeah. well, I mean.
It's another one of those, does he die, does he not?
It's not does he, is it that he died? You don't know what he's going on to do. Is that right?
Well, he just drives off into the distance. Yeah. But like, he's been shot, he's bleeding out pretty profusely. There's a moment where he's sitting there and he's not moving at all and you think he's dead, but then he sort of blinks and starts moving and off he goes. And he does go and see.
The girl.
Carrie Mulligan. Gives her the money, whatever else. And he has defeated the people who were threatening her, but he's still bleeding out.
Yeah. I've strongly hated this movie when the first time I saw it because I'm like, can you people say your line instead of waiting for 10 minutes? But upon second watch, it is better. It probably is a good movie. So fair enough. Okay. I can see this. Drive has a lot of fans.
Yes. I think it's one of those Marmite films, which people
very
either
much so. Although most love. People I talk to say they love it, so I think it's just me.
No, there's a couple other people I know who've ragged on it too. So you're not completely alone.
Okay, all right. My number eight is a popular one. It's Shutter Island. Now, Shutter Island is basically, long story short, it's about this patient who believes himself to be a U.S. Marshal, and he's investigating in his head an insane asylum, and eventually he discovers that he's actually a patient of the place. And the movie suggests that he found his crazy wife who had murdered their kids, and he killed the wife, so that's why he's there. And basically, they're trying to tease out sanity from him so that they can avoid giving him a lobotomy, but the ending is basically, is he cured, is he not cured? It turns out he's not cured, but we don't know whether he's just faking that he's not cured so he can get lobotomy and he doesn't have to live with this horrible crime. So that's hugely wicked because it's kind of three twists. It's kind of one, he's a patient, although you do figure that out early.
Oh, very early in some cases.
Well, if you picked it, like with Mark Ruffalo dropping his gun at the beginning and stuff like that, I didn't pick any of that shit.
The very same when they walk in and Mark Ruffalo looks awkward and whatever at the doctor, I'm like, oh.
Really? Because you could chalk that up to bad filmmaking, but it is a Scorsese, right?
So, it's a Scorsese film.
So you're like, obviously it probably isn't bad
peppering
the
clues and just that one struck a chord.
Really? Yeah.
Obviously didn't know why anything was going on, just
the plot-o-matic.
He's a patient.
Yeah. Oh, okay, well, that's pretty good. And then, you get the thinking, did he actually get cured? No, he didn't get cured. Another twist. And then, is he faking it? Third twist. Very cool. And also a bleak fucking movie.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. All right, that's a good pick. And again, lots of listeners got on board with that one. So you're doing very well here, at least from that particular standpoint. My seven will be on your list. It's a question of how high. This is as high as I could put it. It is from 2000. I said 5 years, didn't I? No, not quite. It is 2014. Fuck. Birdman.
Yeah, man. Birdman.
Alejandro Gonzalez Inarritu's film about sort of a man, Michael Keaton making a comeback, having once been a famous superhero on film, Birdman.
So meta.
Very meta. And shot very much, or lots of one shots and presented as if they are. There's almost no cuts in the film. Of course there are. They move from, it's almost like a stage play because
it's presented like one whole shot. And that's the shit.
The film ends with him going to hospital and walking up to the window and stepping out and off. And initially you think, well, he's committed suicide.
Right.
Because he started to believe the Birdman is him.
Yeah.
He's the Birdman.
Yeah, he could just fly out there.
And then Emma Stone, who plays his daughter, comes into the room and rushes up to the window, realizing what's happened, looks down, then looks up in wonder.
And smiles and everything.
End of film.
The idea being that she's seen him flying around up there.
She's seen something up there, which has taken away from the horror of her dad having killed himself.
Oh, yes. And so the ambiguity is, Did he kill himself and she's just sick like him? Because after all, it is his daughter.
Yep.
Or did he actually fly? Did he actually turn? I mean, this Obviously not.
I think Iñárritu's a Spanish filmmaker. Sorry, a Mexican filmmaker. And there's that whole magic realism thing which happens in this kind of film. So there's sort of an argument culturally that maybe really is. And maybe there really is some magic going on here.
Well, I think the fact that in the movie, it does show you that he was making up certain shit, like with the cab ride and stuff, right? Then, you know, so he probably did just die. That's what I think happened.
Well, that's the easy, dare I say, white way of of reading it. That's what I'm saying. You know, like, culturally, you might be able to read it a different way, but I think the film is larger than
the film's just telling you that he's not, the things you're seeing are not real.
Well, there's that scene in the dressing room, right, where everything's flying around, whatever, and then it cuts and everything's back in place.
Yeah.
Or he goes to the door and whoever walks in.
The opening shot, he's sitting on nothing in the air.
Yep.
That's clearly not happening. Well, now we know. Because of the cab ride, it's not happening.
So you're saying it's not
It's
ambiguous?
Not happening. Or the whole
so
thing,
for you, this film is not on your list?
No, it is ambiguous, but I'm telling you that my decision is really happened.
Sure. All right, but it's on your list.
No, it's not on...
it's not on your list.
It's not on my list,
I'm genuinely shocked.
Yeah. My shit's eclectic, y'all.
Okay. All right, fine. I just thought this was a definite shoe-in. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. My number seven is the movie Enemy. Now,
yeah, I thought this might make you
mistake. Yeah, too. Again, we have talked about this one.
Would
but
be an honorable mention for me if I bothered with honorable mentions this time around.
Really? Yeah, it's actually not the easiest list ever. Jake Gyllenhaal, he's this like somber college professor, and he's a very dull, lonely guy. No, he's lonely. He's with a woman, but he's very like about his life. One day, while watching this rental movie, he spots an actor in it that has he's in a bit part, but that actor looks exactly like him. So he becomes obsessed with finding out about this guy, and he's a double, and then things in the movie get very weird and dealing with issues like the confines of monogamy and spiders, self-worth, more spiders.
There's a spider motif.
Very spider
webs
motif.
And things that are connected.
Right. Now, I actually don't want to spoil this for anyone. So if anyone has seen Enemy, you know the ending I'm talking about, okay? And if you haven't seen it...
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but I want to say that it's so... The reason it's on my list is it's so freaky, unexpected, and confusing... That is probably the only example I can think of this kind of ambiguous ending. Because not only is it not giving you an answer, it actually jolts you out of your chair. When the film ends, you're not just thinking, oh, what happened next? You're thinking, what the fuck did I just watch?
Correct.
And it's really barely just sticks it right in your face. And then you invariably open a browser and you try and figure out what the hell the movie meant. But, which is what I did. Enemy.
Again, fair.
Yeah. So Enemy, ambiguous, but also crazy ending.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree. This film.
Because of the spiders. Paul doesn't like spiders.
I don't like spiders.
At all. And so this would not be a thing that is dear to him, let me tell you.
No.
Even though it's well made.
Yeah, it is a well made film.
But spiders.
I would say this film is exceptionally ambiguous almost the whole way through.
Yeah. Because you're not
different
quite.
Different ways to read
yes,
this film.
Absolutely. Which is why it's cool, man. Like, cool. I wouldn't watch it. I've watched it twice.
Yeah. And some of my higher up my list, the films themselves are a bit more, deal with ambiguity a lot more than just.
Agreed.
The ending, so I can see why that climbs as high as it has for you.
Yeah.
My number five is the other Martin McDonagh film.
Oh.
The newest film on my list, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
I've forgotten how this ends.
It's the newest film on the list, so I'm a little bit reluctant to give the actual spell
out. Just go vague with it. You're not quite sure where something happens. You're not quite sure where... Ah, fuck it. No, go ahead.
All right, I'm just going to... Here it is. Fast forward 1 minute if you are not at all or desperate to see this film and have yet to do so some 15 to 16 months later. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri ends with Frances McDormand's character and the racist cop played by Sam Rockwell driving off together after the guy that they found didn't rape and murder her daughter based on the DNA evidence that Sam Rockwell has procured.
Mm-hmm.
But they both agree that he's the kind of slime ball who's done lots of bad things. In fact, he's bragging about having done something similar to someone when Sam Rockwell
overhears. They're going to kill him.
And they're heading off together to basically kill him. But she says, are we really going to do this? And he's like, I don't know. And then she basically says, well, why don't we just drive and see what conclusion we arrive at.
Now I remember, and that's a really good ending.
It's perfectly ambiguous. Do they go off and murder this guy who is... potentially a murderer and a rapist.
Because you're right in there. You're like, well, what would I do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, maybe I would.
And do they risk their lives and their futures to do this? Or do they just drive and kind of go, you know what?
They can't. They won't be able to pull the trigger. That's what I think.
It's interesting. Again, it's definitely ambiguous. I know. Definitely qualifies the list. And I love this movie. I know I loved it a lot more than you. A lot more than a lot of people.
Yeah, you really like this movie.
It blew me away. So, yeah, that's why it's number six on my list.
Fair enough. That's a good one. That's a good one. My number six is the movie of a book that Paul showed me and told me about when we were in high school. It is American Psycho.
Ah.
Don't get me wrong. I fucking love the movie.
You're gonna cream it this week. You've just gone for all the popular ones with the populace.
Well, do you know what? I had a lot of trouble getting with this because I was sitting there going, well, where does it go and stuff like that? Everyone likes American Psycho?
Well, I think a lot of people like American Psycho more than me because I read the book many years before I saw the film.
Yeah.
And it stuck with me in a way that very few other books have. And so the watered down, I would say almost pathetic version that's put on screen, which is harsh words compared to the book. I think the movie version is...
The book involves him...
Yeah, doing horrible things. I don't even talk about it.
Yeah, and it's disgusting, right? So, it's a different thing. But I thought the way the movie handled it, what the movie did was it allowed you to sort of enjoy it because of the stupid... Like, the credit card scene in the movie is so enjoyable to watch for me. Right? And it's just hilarious. And even
as a man who was once in that ilk of
individual. Yeah, I used to have a credit card, a business card holder, like one of those shing things.
Yep.
Fucking ridiculous.
He also had a Batman credit card that said forever on it.
If only.
Shout out to Jason from Binge Movies Podcast.
Good one. Yeah, but the ambiguous ending with this one, and indeed less so in the book, but we discussed this, that basically we wondered, is the book...
There is absolutely no ambiguity in this film, to my mind. That's why it's not on my list. It's
no way.
100% clear he is not a murderer. It's all in his head.
How is it 100% clear, though?
To me, it is.
Okay, it's strong. I think that the movie shows you.
I take that back. I'm not trying to diss your pick. Yeah. It's perfectly acceptable.
It's ambiguous, right?
But the evidence confidently loads on in the book and in the film. He has not done these things.
Yeah. So, sorry, the ambiguity in the movie is this, he actually does confess to his crimes and it doesn't come to anything. So it's like, well, hang on. Is it that I can get away with anything or did I actually
There's a moment in the book where he basically talks about raping a woman.
Yes, I remember this.
After, that's gross, I don't want to go any further.
Yeah, along
after torturing her effectively. And she just walks up and says, hi, how you going?
Yeah. And like, that's no way that would happen, right? So that's the thing in the movie that makes it a bit weird as well is I think that there's a bit where he starts firing his like little pistol at a.
He kills cops.
He kills cops. He
kills cops and nothing comes of it.
He fires at a fucking truck and it blows up as though he's got like fucking like loaded, like, you know, some explosive. And he looks at the gun even. It's funny. It's like, well, no, this shit's actually happening.
And since then, Bret Easton Ellis has said,
yes,
the most damaging thing that if you met Patrick Bateman would do is
have horrible thoughts about you.
Yes.
So he's actually said
he said
that.
The same
thing. Yeah. Yeah. So, but
I think I'm not going.
No.
It is.
But you know,
set up to be ambiguous.
Until you told me that when you read the book years ago before the movie that it was, oh, we think it's actually a dream. I was like, holy shit, I never thought it would be.
A psychosis,
yeah. That we're like, oh shit, I have no idea about that. And ever since then, that's when I figured out all this like interesting shit about, now I find it interesting to see.
And it makes the film more palatable.
Big time.
A lot more palatable.
Because you're sitting thinking, oh, it didn't happen. Yeah. You know, it's like way better. But you don't know, you don't find that out until the end. So it's a tough, it's clever.
Yep. All right, very nice. My number five was also a popular choice amongst the listeners. It's a film I don't love because I'm a bit more attached to the source material, a little bit like American Psycho, and it's from The Shining.
Ah.
Stanley Kubrick's much vaunted, much loved masterpiece, some would say. Mm-hmm. I find it's okay, but the ending is ambiguous and it's intriguing, and it gets you thinking. This film, to be fair, gets you thinking a lot, and there's even a documentary about it called Room 237, and...
Mm.
Made by a particular filmmaker, it's exploring a lot of the theories that fans have developed over the years about the film.
The ending, of course, being that after Jack Nicholson gets capped and
Jack Torrance freezes to death out in the cold,
right,
chasing his wife and child around with an axe trying to kill them.
Mm-hmm. It's a slow close-up pan up.
We get the sort of tracking shots and whatever through the Overlook Hotel, stopping on a black and white photo from 1921.
Yeah, more balls for a long time ago.
I want to say. And because there's, at the one point, one of the ghosts says to him, you've always been here, Jack.
Yeah.
Yep. And there is Jack Nicholson, Jack Torrance, in the foreground of a big photo of lots of people in that
socialites.
Sort of 20s garb.
Yeah.
Having a party. He's there grinning away.
And it was taken like, you know, 60 years ago,
before
whatever.
The events of this film.
Right. I think I read somewhere that Stanley Kubrick said that essentially Jack Torrance is reincarnated. That's actually a reincarnation. That's
Stanley Kubrick's As far as I'm aware, I have read The Shining, but it's been a long time since I've read it.
Yeah.
It's not the way the book ends.
Is it really?
No. How's the book end? Such. Oh, the book ends. He dies and.
That's it?
Yeah.
Oh, so this is the.
No ambiguity.
That's
this
cool.
This is a product of Kubrick's.
Oh, that makes it way better. That makes the movie way better.
Yeah.
Come on.
I'm much more married to the book.
But that piece at the end, that's another thing that's like the thing to talk about, right?
Well, we have Dr. Sleep coming out later this year.
What is Dr. Sleep?
It's a sequel to The Shining.
The hell you say?
Yeah, not obviously by Stanley Kubrick, but it's sequel to King's novel sequel.
Who's
going to
make it?
Shining. I can't remember who's. It might be. I can't remember. I can't remember if it's did House on Haunted Hill or not.
Okay, kind of cool. Mm. All right, nice. Well, my number five is goddamn Inception, and I tried not to have it on the list because it's so obvious. But good lord,
it's been a while since we've had this happen.
No, really? Wow. Okay. Yeah, jizz bag. All right, fanny fart. It's fine. Okay, good. Now,
no.
Inception. I'm not going to say anything about the plot because everyone's seen this movie, okay? And of course, we're talking about the end, which everyone has also seen, where Cobb goes back and sees his kids in what we are to believe is maybe perhaps reality, but for all we know, who knows? Spins his little fucking totem fucking top thing and... he goes out to meet his kids. Of course, the film cuts before the totem stops spinning, which means you are wondering, is it real? Is it not real? People have done a whole bunch of shit about this, where like there's Cobb only wears his wedding ring when it's not real and this kind of
shit.
The
spinning top starts to waver.
Starts to wobble on purpose. Perfect shot, by the way. I'm like, oh, that's good. And I, of course, think, yes, it is real. And one of the reasons I think that is because Michael Caine was actually interviewed and they said to him, and he said that, he was trying to ask Christopher Nolan, what's the deal with this last scene? And Christopher Nolan said to him, any scene with you in it, Michael Caine, is reality. That's what he said.
Okay.
And Michael Caine was in that last scene, so that's what I think happened. But also...
it's a nice way to interpret it.
Of course
it
is.
But it totally works the other way.
I think the point is that Cobb has forgotten... sorry. Cobb is now over caring whether it's reality or not. It's for him, it's no, a
Cobb
good
has
enough.
Chosen. Cobb has chosen. This is my world now. If indeed
yes,
it's
he's
not
exactly.
Reality,
he's chosen
to be with his kids.
Yep,
he's survived. Ken Watanabe's character, I can't remember the name off the top of my head.
Yep,
has set up him to come back to the States and be with his kids, and he's now safe to do so. He's not being pursued by the law anymore. He chooses
That's the reality he chooses. Yeah,
and there is that question then: if it's a little bit like his wife who chose to stay in there, ultimately,
is she actually real?
So
yeah,
it's great. I think it's fantastic, I think it's criminally low at number five. I am sure what drugs you're smoking, but I'm still disappointed that it is.
You're gonna see that the top half of my list is a little fucking weenie emotional. It's that kind of thing. That's what you're gonna see. And that's why you don't understand it, Paul. Because you have a black black heart.
But an extremely logical mind. Which I think counters adequately. All right, so that was your five.
That was my five.
My number four, again, I wonder if it's on your list because I know you're a bit of a champion in this film as well. It is the foreign language Old Boy from director Park Chan-wook.
It's not because I couldn't remember the actual ambiguity of the ending.
Spoilers for a film from 2003.
Yeah, no. Let me have a go with this. Tell me, fill in the pieces here.
Okay, so Old Boy is a film about a guy who one day basically is kidnapped and wakes up in a hotel room and he cannot escape from the hotel room. He's kept there for, I forget however many...
a shit ton of years, like 20 years.
15 years. 15 years he's kept there and then one day he's released and he doesn't know why he's kept there and he tries everything to escape and he cannot possibly escape because obviously it's not just a hotel room, it's this reinforced little prison.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that, no point getting into why... but he saw something he shouldn't have seen when he was much younger.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who saw it, whose life he ruined as a result, is taking his revenge.
Right.
Meanwhile, whilst investigating after he escapes, he becomes involved with a younger woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she becomes integral in his efforts to find out what is going on.
Yep.
He learns that this has all been orchestrated by the man who had him hidden away. And he's actually been banging.
Yep, this is tough.
His daughter.
Yeah.
The girl is his daughter, and his mind pretty much snaps.
As it would.
As it would.
You've been banging your daughter
the
whole
ambiguity
time.
Is, does the sort of hugging her, smiling in the snow, has he completely snapped and is now living in that fantasy world?
So that's what happened. Because what I remember is, he finds out that he was his daughter, he freaks out, he cuts his own tongue off as sort of contrition of sorts.
Sure he kills the other bloke too.
Does he kill the guy? I can't remember.
Yeah, hazy from...
but then the last scene is what? He's in the snow and he finds his daughter.
Yep.
And then he hugs her.
Yep.
So you're wondering,
she has no idea, of course, this is dad.
Yeah, and
has he blocked that off enough, or is he just going to go along with it, or has he just gone completely insane? And yeah, so the ambiguity is what happens next. Like, this is not a happy ending.
I think the fact that he cut his tongue off means he'll never tell her. Is that the idea?
Yeah, but the look on his face, the actor's face, or I should be able to remember his name, Choi Min-sik.
Yeah.
Is so vacant and spacey crazy.
He might have
completely just separated from reality at that particular point.
That's kind of cool. I forgot about that. You know, the cartoon doesn't have, the original source material does not have that ending. That's so cool.
Yeah, hats off to Park Chan-wook.
So, oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, incredible.
All right. Okay. Now we're going to talk about my penchant for May-December relationships. My number four movie is The Graduate. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, everyone, The Graduate...
Penchant, he says.
That's right. Fuck off, asshole.
Lifestyle, I say.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Now, The Graduate's a 1967 movie, and I saw it when I was a kid, which means it was already still old when I saw it. However, I remember finding it intriguing because it was about the young Dustin Hoffman being seduced by an older lady. Now, in particular, there's this scene where she's trying to seduce him and he's nervous and resists, and she throws everything at him, from being alluring to forcing him into rooms and even just getting angry at him for not undressing her and then trapping him in a room naked with her. It was awesome, right? So I remember going, wow, this is cool. And at the end of the... What are you talking? What are you doing? Are you doing Mrs. Robinson?
Isn't it Sounds of Silence at the end?
No, it's... Oh, it is.
Yeah, thank you.
But also, the other Simon and Garfunkel was... Yeah, that's one. Anyway.
I think the one I was going with is more appropriate, given it was the ending.
Yeah, all right, fine. But anyway, fuck it. The point being, the ending that is weird is that he basically gets involved with Mrs. Robinson's daughter, and she's already being married to some other dude. He goes in there, he destroys the wedding, or just whatever, grabs her, pulls her out. She goes with him.
Breaks up the wedding. And she goes willingly with
him. They run into a bus and they fucking drive away and everyone's chasing them. And they're like, woo! But the cool thing about it is the final shot is on them. They're looking at the camera and the shot just gets held longer. They're really happy. They're really happy. Then they go sad and they go, holy shit. And then their face changes and it's like, shit, what do we do? You don't know what happens next. So it's just cool that that actually happened, because I remember looking at it going, oh, consequences.
Yeah. Like, I'm pretty sure... After the cut, the next words out of Dustin Hoffman's character's mouth were,
bitch, please. That was oddly worth it. That was oddly worth it. All right, Brian, well done.
Thank you.
Yes, but anyway, I don't know. It was just nice to inject some reality. The story goes that the director didn't yell cut on purpose.
Oh.
Just to see what happened.
So they were like getting confused.
Yeah, they were just cool. Yeah, and then that's what made the ending kind of cool.
All right. It's certainly what makes it more memorable, I would agree.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, my number three, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry to everyone who listens to this podcast regularly. I know there's three or four films we both mention a lot, particularly me. I have to own this one more than you.
No.
There's no way I could do a top 10 ambiguous endings films list without this film in it. It's The Thing.
Dude, that's my number three too.
Oh, there you go.
All right, good.
How could you not? All right, so very, very quickly, The Thing is a film about this alien which lands many, many thousands of years ago, gets buried under the ice in Antarctica. And an American research crew comes across the alien effectively, and it has the ability to mimic its victims. So it kills people and then takes them over and acts like a complete perfect replica of them. Imposter. Anyway, the film ends with the two surviving characters, MacReady and Childs, Kurt Russell and Keith David. And they're basically sitting there in the wreckage of the camp. They know they're going to die because they've blown the camp up and there is no rescue coming for, I can't remember, they do mention how many days before they're overdue to check in. Are going to freeze to death, and they're looking at each other, and MacReady basically says, if we've got any surprises for each other, Childs, I don't think there's much we can do about it. He's paraphrasing.
Totally.
Those words exactly right. And they just share a drink out of the bottle, and there are fan theories, and it fades to black.
What is the fan theories?
Oh, fan theories up the
galore.
Way. Yeah.
Well, the cool thing about that ending is that I saw it also when I was like 15 or something, right? And then when it ended, the person I was thinking with, I was like, so what happened? And they're like, that's it. Like, what do you mean? I really wanted an answer. I'm like, no, the idea is you don't know what the fuck's going on. And I'm like, what, you can do that in movies? I was really like, no, I'm going to need closure here. And that's how it was. So this is the first time I saw that. Oh, by the way, I realized that in all of my choices, I haven't told you what I was going to do, which is, you know, this is what I think happened. I've forgotten to mention that completely, but if anyone cares.
No, some of them you have.
Yeah, okay. Well, for the record, the thing, the thing that happens
dun, dun, dun.
Is that MacReady, now he's holding the flamethrower, as I recall.
Yep.
The other guy, he's like...
Charles.
Yeah, Charles. What they do is one of them, I don't think it's going to be MacReady, since I think he's not the actual bad thing. He's going to say to Charles, hey, young man, listen, rather than sit here like two bitches, why don't we try that blood thing again where we fucking try the thing, all right?
Okay.
And if Charles goes, yeah, man, they do it, right? If Charles goes, I don't want to do it, boom, immediately fucking tortures him. That's it. Because that's the only reason you can do it.
Okay.
So then MacReady might also die because there's no one fucking coming. But that's what I think it is.
Okay. Well, it's nihilistic, whatever happens. And I'm pretty sure...
Maybe you get a distress signal out of something, you know.
John Carpenter has gone on the record saying this is the first film in my apocalyptic trilogy. So one of them is, or the thing is alive somewhere else in the camp and it gets out and the rest of the world dies.
Wow. This has been continued in a comic book, everyone, just so you know.
Has also been continued in a game.
Game? Mm-hmm. That's a bit cool.
It's a big film. All right. Well, that's the thing at number three for both of us. The Graduate, what happens after that?
Oh, here's what happens. Okay.
So does he say bitch, please?
He says the 1970s, but whatever version of bitch, please, which is, I don't know what it is. But what happens is, as they go, oh my God, they look at each other and say, you know what? That was pretty fucked up. You left your whole family back there and I don't really do anything. I'm still a fucking student. Let's go to a hotel, figure this out. But then she just calls the guy and says, I'm so sorry I did that. The family ostracizes her. They're like, you silly, silly bitch. He never sees her again because she's like, fuck the whole life. Her turn, her world turns to shit.
He doesn't get on the phone and say to her,
bitch, please. Paul spent the whole time setting that up, everyone. He was pulling switches, all kinds of shit. Justin Hoffman finishes his degree and becomes just a normal person. That's how it ends. Okay. Hey, that's why they led, that's what I cut early.
All right, back to me, isn't it? Then for my number two, we both had there. So my number two is where Inception fell for me.
Mm.
Yeah. I think that spinning top is just a great moment. Number in a film two. Which is otherwise exceptionally ambiguous anyway, like... What's a dream? What's not a dream?
It's wonderful, man. It's such a good show.
Magnificent film.
Yeah. Okay. My number two is, this is something Paul and I have been discussing for many years, okay? But I'm going to tell you that I actually have an answer. I have a definitive answer.
Oh, damn!
And it's not coming from me, okay? But the movie is Total Recall. And of course, Paul and I, since the age of fucking, well, year 10, year 9, year 10.
Yeah, what came out?
So 1990. Okay. Since 1990, we've been having this argument.
Yeah, we have.
Where I think it's a dream, and Paul thinks it is not a dream. I point to many reasons why it's a dream. Paul points to like one reason why it's not. And of course, it's an internet wild thing. Now, let me tell you this. I went a-Googling, and Paul Verhoeven, 2 years ago, or in 2016, came out and actually said, this is the answer. I warn you, it is unsatisfying.
Ooh.
Okay? This is what he says. Total Recall doesn't say whether it's reality or it's a dream, you know? It's really saying there's this reality and there's that reality and they both exist at the same time. Because you look at Total Recall, there is never a preference, let's say taken by me or the scriptwriter, to say this is really what happens or that is the truth. I want it to be that way.
So he's saying it's meant to be ambiguous.
But he said this, it is totally ambiguous, and he basically says he thinks he succeeded in not being, in not as a filmmaker, making you think one way or the other way.
I would agree.
He said, there's no solution. It's both true. So I say in two realities, there was an innovative in movie language, at least to a certain degree, that there would be two realities and there's no choice. So, Paul, if you think it wasn't a dream, you're right. If you people thought it was a dream, you're right. Right.
Oh, you know what? I'm comfortable with this.
I actually think...
I'm ready after 29 years
to settle
to bury this hatchet.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. It was both.
Yep. I can live with that.
All right. I'm going to say that I will live with that. What the fuck? Some motherfucker hasn't let the button go yet. All right.
I changed the effect, actually.
Yeah.
It was worth it. Look, I'm very comfortable with it. And you know what? I'm just going to do it and say it right now. It's my number one.
It's your number one.
Well, it had to be. It's the biggest fucking debate we've had in film history.
You're right. For the debate version. 29
years.
Yes.
And I thought, well, that elevates it, right? And for us to now bury the hatchet over that. After 29 years of arguing about it and 4 years of the podcast, which, by the way, totally forgot to mention it again. It was our 4-year anniversary last week.
We've been doing this for 4 years? You guys are so kind to keep listening to us. Thank you.
So, and the long-term listeners will have heard us. I think we did an episode about it at some particular point, and we talked about it at length and got yelled and screamed at one another. How nice, then, that we could be here today.
You're right.
And not one of us said to the other,
eat my ass! Eat all the S's, man! At least not out loud. Well, why don't you give us a 10 to 1?
All right, yeah. I'll give you my recap, and then we'll reveal Wayne's number 1 to wrap up today's countdown. My 10, The Wrestler. 9, In Bruges. 8, Drive. 7, Birdman. 6, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. 5, The Shining. 4, Old Boy, the Korean version, South Korean version.
Mm-hmm.
3, The Thing. 2, Inception. And my number 1, as we have just discussed, Total Recall.
Very good, my man. Well, my 10 to fucking 1.
10 to 2 and then revealing a 1.
10 to 2 the 1 is 10, Life of Pi. 9, Lost in Translation. 8, Shutter Island. 7, Enemy. 6, American Psycho. 5, Inception. 4, The Graduate. 3, The Thing. 2, Total Recall. And my number 1 is, I'm surprised this is not on your list, but maybe you left it off because it's too obvious, Basic Instinct.
All right, and I will tell you why I left it off, but please.
Okay. Everyone, Basic Instinct, again, if you're a long-time listener, you know we love this, and you know that I love Sharon Stone, despite not looking like James Bond. And
wait, you mean Sharon Stone doesn't look like James Bond, or you don't?
No, I don't, hence I cannot attract Sharon Stone, according to my mother.
Nice.
Basic Instinct is a movie about, at the beginning, this chick, and you can't see her face, but she is naked. She's about to do some dude, and at the point of climax, she's riding on him. She whips out a ice pick and then goes to town on him, killing him right in the ass. Now.
Or the face.
Or the face. All right. And that's the whole movie with like Michael Douglas. And the whole idea is Catherine Tremell, Sharon Stone, the murderer, or is it her hot lesbian girlfriend who looks a lot like her?
Or is it
Beth the therapist, yes, who also, according to the movie, has a blonde wig? So we don't know which woman in the movie is the killer. And at the end of the movie, spoilers, it looks like she's reaching down and she's in bed with Michael Douglas. She looks like she's reaching down to pick up something and then stab him with it, but she doesn't. She just grabs him. They make out. The movie fades to black, but then it fades back in. Dun, dun, and then the camera pans down. Dun, 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 and you see a fucking ice pick under the goddamn dead. Right. So the ambiguous thing is, wait a minute. Was she about to stab Michael Douglas, mm-hmm, and changed her mind?
Well, what he says, I'm like, oh, fuck like minks, raise rugrats, live happily ever after. She goes, I hate rugrats. And he goes, yeah, fuck like minks, live happily ever after.
Right. So, and then like maybe, yep, she's going to go kill him, right?
So she's going to kill him when he wanted kids and now he doesn't. Okay.
Right. Exactly. But she reached down. Yeah, you're right. She came back up. But it could also be that one of the previous murderers, yep, left that. She didn't even know it was there. She just happened to be reaching down. All that kind of shit.
Can right? I say, if we took the film on its own, mm-hmm, my list would be slightly different. This would be my number one because and therefore be... If...
it would be You're the Best. Go on.
If there wasn't a sequel, which basically tells us.
There was not a sequel, Paul. I'm Indy 4-ing the shit out of that sequel. All right.
Indy what-ing?
Yeah, exactly. Right, well, yeah, done. Well done.
And the same reason that Blade Runner is not on my list. I'm sorry, everyone. I'm not a huge fan of Blade Runner. I came to it too late.
I know. I love Blade Runner. But yes,
it is an excellent ambiguous ending until you see Blade Runner 2049, which completely explains everything.
No, it doesn't.
For me, it does.
It doesn't tell you whether he's a replicant or not. Does it
by
not?
The laws of that world, it does. I don't want to get into it here.
All right, fine. We'll talk about this.
By the laws of that
people.
World, he's clearly not a replicant in my realm.
Okay, well, we'll talk.
So,
but with Basic Instinct.
The point is that those two films would have been on my list, but I had to find reasons to cut things.
Understandable, and you want to go with your favorites. And if it wasn't one of your favorites.
Basic Instinct is absolutely one of my favorites and would be here. But
I see.
Yeah.
Well, everyone, I know what happened.
Well, we do because there's been a sequel, but please continue.
No, no. Okay, let's forget the sequel, right? Because at the time of production, this is what I believe the story was.
All right,
okay?
So you're saying flashback to 1992, and here is what happened to Nick Curran.
At the end of Basic Instinct.
Catherine Tremell at the end of Basic Instinct. According to Wayne.
Okay. So after she grabs him and they start making out, they just go ahead and do it. Now, you see what happened, folks? I may not know a lot about psychology or the mind of a murderer, but there's one thing I do know, and that's titties. Now, if you look at the beginning opening scene, all right, the woman who is killing Johnny Boz is definitely Sharon Stone's titties, all right?
Ooh,
absolutely,
that's
all right?
A bingo.
Go ahead if you don't like. You can look. I could, if I saw your titty, ladies, once, and then I saw it again in a crowd, I could pick it out like a sniper.
It's true.
Okay?
It's true.
I'm
Wayne,
telling you.
Wayne has displayed incredible breast awareness
yes,
to his entire
exactly,
life.
Exactly, okay? And it's just because I'm a fan. So... And yeah, that person killing Johnny Boz is the same as Sharon Stone.
Ask you who was on the podcast 2 weeks ago. He's got no idea.
I'm more visually oriented, Paul, which means unintelligent. So, yes, Catherine Tremell is most definitely a killer. She killed at least one of these people. Definitely Johnny Boz, in fact. So she did know the pick was underneath. She just chose not to use it.
Not to kill him at that particular point.
Yeah. She might kill him later, but that's how this is. So she ain't innocent is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Word.
I can accept that explanation. Of course, as you say, the film is ambiguous. All right, they are our list. I've mentioned my honorable mentions already. Wayne, anything else you want to quickly just rattle off?
Yeah, I had Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Ass. And a reason is because you don't know if they get together at the end, but I think you do. You do because he said, okay, right?
Yep. He accepted her now for her foibles, I thought.
Yeah, that's why I left it off the list, because I'm like, ooh, but that was kind of cool. I saw Synecdoche, New York.
I haven't seen it, so don't spoil this one.
No, I won't.
And I should have seen it because it's 17 years old, but I haven't yet.
No, it's pretty bleak is what I'll tell you, but it's still quite good to watch.
I'm up for watching it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there you go.
That's what we thought. Who got it right? Who got it wrong? You can let us know in the vote in the Facebook listening community. If you're not a member there already, do join up. Link is in the show notes. And then let's get into what you had to say in our Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Kicking off then this week's Pop 10 with Josh Mraz, who said, the Al Pacino movie Cruising has one of the most underappreciated ambiguous endings. Throwing another two, Enemy and Annihilation.
Ooh. Annihilation, I haven't seen.
Oh, haven't you?
No.
You should watch it.
Netflix, yeah?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yep. Annihilation. The STST cast, The Thing, The Shining, and Dark City.
Hey, Dark City was good, man.
Dark City
also,
was
it wasn't
pretty
ambiguous because you found out where they were at the end.
I thought, without spoiling it, I thought it gave a good enough ending, but anyway.
I thought, anyway.
Sure. Etienne Fillion Xavier said The Thing, Annihilation, and Total Recall.
Annihilation again.
Mm, and the other two big films on the list. Mm-hmm. From Julio from The Contrarians, top level patron of the show. How is it that no one has sucked up to Paul yet by mentioning Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri?
Well, they have now.
And then the big film guy said, we try not to suck up to Paul. It swells his ego, which will help his manhood. And wait, were we talking about dicks? Gerald from Two Peas on a Pod said, American Psycho, there you are. No Country for Old Men, which I'm sure you'll be pleased
fuck that shit
to hear. And The Shinin.
Oh, yeah.
Anthony Procopio said American Psycho, again, Blade Runner, and Birdman.
Oh, nice.
Pita Comics had American Psycho, Castaway, and American History X. Is that because we don't know whether they got together or not?
No, dude, Castaway has this sweet, sweet ending that no one knew about, or that people don't seem to get, right? So, at the end, the only package Tom Hanks doesn't open on the island is that FedEx one, and it's got angel wings on it.
Okay. Yep.
Okay. When he finally gets back at the end of the movie, he goes to deliver that parcel himself, right? Puts it down, whatever, and then realizes, well, that's it. I delivered the parcel, and he stops at this four-way crossroads, right? And then what happens is he's like, I don't know what to do next. This woman pulls up in a truck, and she's hot, and she says, you know, what? He's like, what are you doing? He's like, I don't know what I'm doing. She's like, well, if you go north, you have this place. If you go west, you do this place. If you go right, you do this place. She basically points out the options, right? And he's like, oh, okay, cool. And she goes, okay, well, see you later. He goes, thanks. She gets in the car, drives away. As she drives away, you look at the car down to the fucking tailbite. That little angel thing is there. The little angel logo is on the car. No, she is the fucking owner of the package that saved his life all those years.
Okay, right.
And she's hot, which means he's probably going to go fuck her.
Oh.
That's the end of the movie.
I thought we were leaning towards she's the angel.
No, that would be really cool. Yeah. But this one, I like the one better because she's really hot.
Okay, can we stop mentioning that now? Clearly she is.
I think it's funnier if I talk about how hot she is. That's why it's there. Keep
going.
Okay. All right.
James Spence, good friend, top level patron to the show. Thank you, James, every week for listing out our choices. The Thing, Her, which I've never seen.
Oh, like no, James I haven't Smith, either. Yeah.
And In Bruges. And he reckons Inception doesn't have an ambiguous ending. It's pretty damn obvious they're not in a dream.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I think, too.
Christiani, Birdman, Total Recall, and The Dark Knight Rises.
Now, come on. That wasn't a dream. Alfred actually saw them at a cafe in fucking Paris.
Yeah, but who becomes Batman? I think that may be what he's referring to.
Robin becomes Batman. That's...
And then he also had his little bonus, in brackets, Reap. This is the show. Wayne and I made a film many moons ago, which has never seen light of day, though the trailers have, if you
despite
know
my fighting
where to look.
Oh, let me just jump in about Reap.
If you must.
Yeah, listener Jen told me that she came across the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
But as a suggested YouTube thing, so...
As a suggested YouTube?
Yeah, but probably because she looked for it or something. But and oh my God, she laughed very hard.
Total views of about 125.
Oh, my God.
We are very close to in the money.
Yeah, it's like half a classroom.
All right. Thank you for that, Chris. Sam Hurley from Movie Reviews and 20Qs Podcast. In Bruges, Drive, And, okay, one obvious because, for fuck's sake, why wouldn't I? The Thing.
Oh my God, that's got your vote.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Sam has a habit of just voting you anyway. Emily from Tasteless Podcast, Black Swan. Natalie's completely tenuous grasp of reality throughout teased up the ending well. Yeah, okay.
We can agree she's actually, she's mad though.
Right? Oh yeah, she's another psychotic person. Peter has had Inception, Fight Club, and Us. If you want to hear our thoughts on Us, hang around for a few days. Our review, full review, dropping this coming weekend. If you're hearing this, well, after the fact, go out and check out our Us review.
Wait a minute. Ambiguous Us ending.
Yep. Can't talk about it now.
I know we can't. All right, fine. All right, we'll go.
In-Session Film Podcast, JD from that show. Pretty much anything. Tarkovsky, 400 Blows, Lost in Translation, there you are.
Yay!
Arrival and Midnight Special. I didn't think Arrival was that ambiguous.
Neither did I, because they did actually go ahead and do all the things that, because she was flash-forwarding. So, But still, I love that fucking movie, so there you are.
Otherwise, great list. Debauched 1-2, No Country for Old Men, there it is again. Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome.
How did that end?
Pretty much sure it ends with Max walking off into the desert and the kids forming their own community near Sydney. Because
they don't need another hero.
Yeah. And The Thing, once again. Film Grouch had just basically Instant Count. There you go.
Of course it counts, man.
Lillian Sue had The Wrestler, Black Swan, and American Psycho.
Beautiful.
Last couple to wrap it up then. Netflix and Swill had Shutter Island, Inception, and The Thing. There we are. And WrestleBear had The Graduate, there you are, Wayne. Birdman, and this was mentioned quite a bit, and I don't know why it's somehow missed it so far, and the ones I've selected, 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Oh, yeah, because, of course, with the baby, yeah.
The baby and how he gets transformed into that, and I don't know, it's weird. The monolith and blah, blah, blah.
He's a weird god baby.
Yeah, and lastly, Dave from Super Movie Brothers Podcast, who were good enough to feature us this week as their indie spotlight, so thank you very much for that, Dave.
Nice.
And Jay, The Thing, Blade Runner, brackets, Final Cut, Lost in Translation, and why not a No Country for Old Men thrown in as an honorable mention? I don't care that you only said three. I'm a reckless motherfucker.
Maverick.
Thank you for that, Dave. Thank you to everyone who gets back to us. We can't get through them all. We really, truly do appreciate it, and you help shape the show. So keep it coming.
Especially this show. This episode.
That is it for episode 209 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. If you do want to contribute to future shows, Wayne, how do people do that?
Search for the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews on just Google, but even Facebook, or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at thecountdownpc. You can hit us up in the Facebook listener community. Link is in the show notes, and we host our show through Podbean. Follow us there to keep up with the show and our website, ccradio.com.au, where we share some internet real estate with some other great shows, Comic Confidential, Potterheads, Believe, and the new show coming, Great Mates. So check out that one soon. All right, that's it for today's episode. Wayne, what's happening next week for episode 210? And I believe we're going to answer a bit of a fan criticism of the show.
Is that so?
Yeah, we don't do enough TV.
Okay, fair enough. You know, Paul.
So this is for you.
That's right, you folks. The Game of Thrones is coming.
You can't handle the truth!
That's true, because it's going to end eventually too, and that's going to be pretty sad.
7 weeks after it starts.
Yeah, so we're gonna count down next week.
Sorry, 7 weeks? 6 weeks after it starts. 6 episodes a season.
Yeah, that's big, right?
So Small.
Small, but like they're long episodes. So
well, some of them.
Some of them. We're going to count down the top 10 Game of Thrones characters that are most likely to die.
That's it. So this is for all you Throners out there. This is very TV-centric. We're sorry if you're not a Game of Thrones fan, but if you are, this is the episode for you. We're going to go on record we're going to compare at the end, by the way, who got most right.
That's right. And if you're not a Throner, you've only got a week or so to nail 6-7 seasons?
By the time this episode drops, you've got about 13 days.
13 days. You can do it.
7 seasons.
You can do it.
And you fucking should.
Oh, yeah. It's the best show on TV. There.
All right, that is it for next week's show. A bit of a different type of countdown, something a bit more niche, a little bit more away from films for a while.
Sure. Like. So a little break.
Hope you'll enjoy that one. So that is it for today's episode. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
I fart in your
bullshit.
Direction.
Not sure why you didn't do anything
it's
that
just
bad
bullshit.
Today.
Yeah, I know. It's fine.
We will catch you next week.
Yeah.